This is Business Impact, a podcast series from UCD College of Business, Ireland's leading business school. I'm your host, Emmett Oliver, and each episode I'll be joined by world-renowned faculty from across the College of Business, as well as international industry leaders who'll offer us insight, spark curiosity, and challenge you to rethink how you do business in a changing world. Now, you're welcome to another edition of Business Impact. It's great to have you along. It has been a bumpy few months, I think. It's probably just not me. I think it's probably all of you listening too. We've had, obviously, we got over COVID, we got over inflation, and now we have tariffs and all sorts of other things going on. But we are in April. If the days are brighter. A lot of students talking to me about what their future might hold over after the summer months go and into the next year. And obviously, some of them are leaving college. Some are only coming in. So there's a lot of variety, a lot of questioning, I suppose, in the air about a lot of different things, geopolitics and the economy and so on. So we're kind of today concentrating on very much practical, pragmatic guidance. You know, what kind of things are out there in the job market? What's the labour market like? What kind of the skills of the future? You know, from listening to us over the years, we've talked about all sorts of things on here, strategy, organisations, climate change, the past, the future of the economies. We talked about corporate developments. Every one of those things have all been a mixed bag. But today it's very much the practical that we're emphasising with my guest. And that is Louise Campbell, who is the senior manager here at Smurfit of the Careers Network. And she's involved in all sorts of things. She's 1,500 students or thereabouts and well over 20 plus programmes that she talks to, people leaving those and developing through those. Louise, you're very welcome to Business Impact. Great to have you.
Thank you, Emmett.
Thanks for coming on. As I said in the intro, we're going to be very practical today. We're going to hopefully create a podcast that will be of real practical value for people, whether they're on the bus, train, doing their jogging or any of those things, they can listen in and draw something from it. But first of all, introduce yourself to us, to our listeners. You've been in the recruitment game for a long time, and I hope I'm not dating you by saying that, but some big jobs and big companies. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure, absolutely. Well, hi everyone, Louise Campbell is my name. I am the Senior Manager of Careers with Smurfit. I started my career after doing a business and political science degree back in, and I won't spend too long on this because I will show my age, back in 1996. I moved to Australia, actually, and I began my career in recruitment in Australia, where I recruited finance staff in North Sydney. So lots of accountants into a variety of different industries. I then was there for 2 years and moved with that business to London, where I worked again, recruiting predominantly finance staff into the London market. And at the time, it was a busy time in the world of telcos and dot-coms. And that was predominantly where we were placing people. I then moved home back to Dublin in 2003 and set up Robert Walters, which is a professional services recruitment business. And we grew that business over roughly, for me, I was there for 20 years to recruit into specialist areas like finance, legal, compliance, banking, all areas of financial services. And in the last couple of years with Robert Walters, I actually moved into a global head of learning and development, where I looked at training our staff across the globe. There was roughly about 4,000 staff across the globe, making sure that there was really a seamless transition into our world of work and making sure that everybody had a fairly straightforward path in terms of their learning and development throughout their time in the business. And then last year I moved to Smurfit.
Yes, indeed. We're very lucky to have you. I've always been curious, who was Robert Walters? I'm so familiar with the brand, but I've never known him.
Robert Walters is alive and well, living in London. He was an ex-accountant himself who decided back in the 80s to set up this business, and it became a very successful global company.
Now, you have a lot of interests outside of recruitment. One that struck me when I get a LinkedIn link from everyone who comes onto our show to familiarise, but that was the least I could do with their background and previous associations and so on. And one of them that I noticed was the Trojan Swimming Club, which is a well-known Dublin swimming club. Tell us a bit more about that.
Correct. I think it started probably as with most people when they join community sporting bodies because they put their children in. And I had two children who were avid swimmers, one who has gone on to become a competitive swimmer. And I was spending so much time at the pool because I'm there at in the morning time before school, in the evening time after school, that I decided to make myself useful, and I joined the committee, and I've been chair of Trojan for 3 years, and now currently I've just this year stepped into a vice chair role, and because I've done my term. But it's a fantastic swimming club in the heart of South Dublin with about 200 members, growing all the time, and really nurturing kids' potential from the age of 16 up to 18, 19 years of age. It's a great club. Any, I suppose, community sports club is a great thing to be involved in.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's got a real boost from Ireland's Olympic success in the last year or so.
Absolutely. So. It's a great time to be in the world of swimming. It's an aspirational time.
Okay, well, listen, let's get on to the meat and drink of what we're here to discuss today, which I suppose is where the labour market is going and where the jobs market is going. It's always very dynamic, and there's different trends, cross-cutting trends, and just things that maybe are hard to see when they're actually happening. It's only later on that we get a handle on them. A lot of our listeners are probably going to be saying, well, I've got certain academic qualifications, I've certain programs, certain fields I'm in. They may have very good grades as well. A lot of our listeners are very accomplished academically and so on. But what is the thing that maybe, and it's very hard to pull out just one thing, but what is the one thing that might differentiate you in the current environment? Is it hard or soft skills? Or just talk us through what do you think, if you had to pull one thing out, that might really make you a very sort of, I suppose, in-demand graduate of some kind?
Sure. Well, I think just to start by saying, Emma, I think that the world of recruitment and recruiting is changing at a quicker pace now more than ever before. And what we're seeing at the moment is this huge world of flux. But one, there's a number of trends that we are seeing. And the first really would go back to your point, and it's the emphasis on soft skills. So while technical skills and academic achievements get your foot in the door, absolutely, it is your soft skills that will determine how far you will go. And I think beyond technical proficiency, employers now are really prioritizing soft skills. They've never been more critical for graduates who are entering the workforce, especially in today's competitive and, as I said, like rapidly evolving job market. You know, I think as AI and automation take over technical and repetitive tasks, human-centric skills like critical thinking, problem solving and emotional intelligence are becoming huge and real differentiators when looking and comparing graduates against each other.
Now, Louisa, obviously it's hard to, discern them or discover them, or maybe it's not, you're going to tell me, but it's easy to see someone when they put in front of you their grades, they have the certificates and the paperwork to show that. But these softer skills, I mean, is it through the interview? Is it through an aptitude test or maybe a psychometric testing of some kind? How do employers find out if somebody has these softer skills?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a variety of different ways. And again, the world of recruitment is changing so much at the moment. But, typically it is through the interview process. The soft skills that employers are really looking for now when they're looking at graduates and when they are hiring them and assessing them would be things like communication skills, whether that be verbal, written or digital communication. They're all critical. Emotional intelligence would be another one. Adaptability and resilience. Again, the world of work has never evolved at such a pace. So the ability to be able to pivot and handle challenges is invaluable. Then they will also look at things like collaboration and teamwork, being able to work well with others, being able to resolve conflicts in the workplace, business partnering across cross-functional teams. It's no longer good enough, Emma, just to be a strong accountant. You have to be able to work with and explain yourself to sales teams, to HR departments, to tech teams. Maybe you're working through a business transformation project, etc. Then you've got things like problem solving and critical thinking. So every single employer that we talk to will want people who can think independently, who can assess situations, who can come up with effective solutions, particularly given the vast amounts of data that organizations are now collecting. So to have that ability and the initiative to be able to challenge the status quo and to drive decision making through data is now crucial.
Right. Well, I find it fascinating what you're saying about the interview process. Because it's kind of a death warrant was written a few years ago, where people say that AI tools and so on, the sort of sifting that the AI can do for you will eliminate candidates that you don't think are suitable. But and from what I'm hearing from you is that actually the interview process is coming back into the foreground. Would that be fair?
Well, I think the interview process will take form in many different ways. Right now, I would still say that the majority of employers in the Irish market or conducting face-to-face interviews. But that will come after a CV screening, which AI may or may not be involved in. It will then likely progress to a telephone interview and then a face-to-face interview. Some companies are far more advanced than others right now. So some companies will be adopting maybe gamification into their interview process, or there will be assessment centers, and there will be a variety of group exercises or case studies. But I would say for the majority of roles, you're looking at a face-to-face interview at some stage along the interview process.
Now, just to take a small detour, the gamification one, that intrigues me. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, you would have organisations in the Irish market who would be asking candidates to come in on site and maybe give them a virtual simulation of a problem that in real time they will be asked to solve. And this really assesses things like, you know, your job seekers' critical thinking skills. How fast can they think on their feet? What decisions do they make? What is the rationale behind that decision making? And that all forms a picture for a potential employer of, you know, is this person the person that I want to hire? Are they the right person for my business?
Now, Louise, as you've said, you've been in this industry for a while. You've seen the trends come and go, right? You've seen some things turn out to be fads and didn't have the staying power. Others had real meaningful effects on the industry. AI has obviously been talked about a lot, its use in HR more broadly and also in recruitment. So talk to us a little bit about where you see AI fitting in. Is it going to replace the recruiter? Is it going to be a tool, a supplement?
The million-dollar question, really, I think. Yeah. You know, at the moment, Emmett, I think AI and various forms of technology are really revolutionising the recruitment process, whether that be by streamlining processes, by improving a candidate experience, or, you know, enabling data-driven hiring decisions. So AI-powered tools such as CV screening software, chatbots, predictive analytics, they all help recruiters identify top talent more efficiently. Video interviews with AI analysis are now, you know, relatively, I wouldn't say commonplace, but they are taking place at the moment. As I said, some form of gamification or assessment through a game, a virtual simulation, and virtual reality job simulations. These are all things that are not going to go away. They're coming into the market now. Some firms, as I said, are using them much more than others. So I believe they definitely are here to stay. Now, that's not saying that they don't come without challenges. You know, AI is really in its infancy, although it's evolving at a huge pace. But, you know, things like eliminating potential bias in the algorithms, the risk of making the hiring too impersonal, because people at the end of the day still want to have a good candidate or a good job seeker experience. You want to feel like when you go to interview for a business, this is the right place for me. I've met people, I've shaken hands with them, I've sat down, I've, you know, had an informal conversation, and I feel like I could belong here. I don't think yet we're ready for a world where we're going to be interviewed by a robot online and then we take a job. Now, who knows what that's going to be like down the line? I think AI is going to get more sophisticated and the job seeker experience is going to, you know, improve along the way. But right now, it's really about striking that balance between automation and human interaction. It's crucial for a positive candidate experience. You know, and the future of AI in recruitment, I think, includes really hyper-personalized candidate journeys, AI-driven onboarding. There's some parts of the recruitment process that AI can take, you know, straight away in terms of, you know, maybe the CV selection, reference checking, AI-driven onboarding, creating a seamless process for people, no matter whether they work in Dublin or London or Sydney or New York, you know, and I think that these kind of things can really leverage AI effectively.
Now, can I ask you just one thing on that? I'm trying to always anticipate what our listeners would be asking at this point, and yeah. I don't always get it right. But one of the things they might be saying, particularly people who are mid-career, and I know you deal with a lot of them through the MBA program and so on, they might interpret all of this as the hurdles to getting a hire or new hire are growing. In other words, there are certain companies that we know from Silicon Valley, and so we won't mention their name, that, you know, there's a lot of rounds of interviews and it's a very long, elongated process. So is there a concern among candidates that they might almost say, it's just not worth the candle. There's so much involved between testing and gamification and this and that and the other. I might just stay where I am, because it's just the hurdle, that the wall to get into that new role becomes so high. They might just say, I'm just not interested. Is that a danger, do you think?
I don't think so. I think that the world of, work and recruitment at the moment is very competitive, no matter what. You need to be able to be prepared to interview. And I would say to any job seeker and anyone who comes into the careers network in Smurfit is probably sick of us telling them this, but, you need to treat your job search as almost a full-time job for a period of time, whether that be getting your CV up to scratch, whether it be researching the company, whether it be practicing your answers to competency-based questions, knowing, the values of the firm that you've applied for, knowing why you're the right fit for that business. It takes ages. And anybody who sits back and says to themselves, oh, applying for a job is easy, I'll just throw my CV in, someone will phone me, I'll meet them for a coffee and then get a job. It doesn't. It's lovely.
You're breaking my heart here.
It's the good old days, I'm afraid, yeah. And they made my days as a recruiter very enjoyable. But it's much more competitive now. And I think even from a regulatory perspective, when big firms are hiring, they need to be able to justify their decisions, and they do that by involving people, other people in the business, by having more than one round. Now, I'm not saying I agree with 7 rounds of interviews either, Emmett. I think that there comes a point in time where people need to make a decision and go, are these people right for the business? But I think there's a happy medium in between. And so long as, both sides, whether that be the job seeker or the employer, is given a level of comfort over, one another, I think that's where you need to be.
Yeah, and I suppose you have to take the world as it is, not how you want it to be. So if that's the way that the system is set up to get the hire, you have to live with that. The other thing I'd like to ask you a little bit about is just the skills thing back again. I mean, obviously you're talking about data, analytical skills. You've mentioned the softer skills, but are they looking a lot of the time, the companies, for specific data skills or more like data awareness or somebody that's kind of in that middle ground where they can absorb and draw knowledge from data, but they're not full-on data scientists? Is there sort of a happy medium in there that could be quite productive for a recruit?
There's all of the above, really, there, Emmett. I think with the rise of data-driven decision-making, there's a heightened demand for graduates who can analyse and interpret complex data. So whether that be skills in data analytics, whether it be numeracy, and also technology like IT skills, they're becoming essential, in particularly in the finance and business sectors, but really is growing across multiple industries. So you're talking finance, technology, healthcare, consulting. Companies are seeking graduates now who can interpret data, extract insights from data, and then support, decision making with that data. So that's one side of things. It's really looking at being able to drive decisions through data. Then there's also, I suppose, more technical skills like data visualization, statistical analysis, programming languages like Python, etc. They're all very highly valued as well. So I think with Ireland positioning itself as a hub for, fintech, AI, big data, employers are really prioritizing candidates who've got expertise in all of those areas. Even actually, what I would say is what's becoming highly important is in non-technical roles. So traditionally, these type of skill sets were required if you wanted to work in tech. But now we're seeing just an increasing amount of criteria within roles like marketing and sales, where the employers will be saying, if you work in marketing now, you need to be able to work with data. It's absolutely key. And that analytics piece to drive decision making is going to be key within the functions of marketing and sales from here on in as well.
Now, what I do hear from some students who are, might be in the, the postgrad phase, but they're still quite young and they're the early phases of their career development. They say, I got this new job, I did all these interviews, I had my AI chatbot experience, etc. But when I got in there, I was hybrid working and I found it very hard to meet anybody, found myself a bit isolated, a bit cut off. Remote work is fine, but when you're trying to build a career and put in those early pillars, it may not be ideal. Could you advise somebody on that, just how to sort of navigate those first difficult year or two, which is fine for us of a different generation who've already gone past that stage, but very difficult for someone in their 20s To get through that phase where you're remote working and not seeing a lot of people apart from on a screen.
Sure. And I do think that it can be really tough for graduates when entering into the workplace, really keen to make an impression and to create a network, to be going into an office where their boss and their team is only in 1 or 2 days a week. And I think that it is a real challenge for them. It's become a significant consideration. I think, you know, for any advice that I would give to graduates would be to demonstrate, you know, flexibility and the ability to work effectively in diverse environments. So to do that and to really thrive in a hybrid workplace, I think graduates must be, you know, super proactive in communication and visibility. And what I mean by that is engaging in meetings, keeping the camera on, scheduling regular check-ins with managers and colleagues, and really focus on building connections. And those connections might have come very naturally in the past when you're in the office 5 days a week, you know, the water cooler moments that people talk about. But I mean, really proactively networking across teams, potentially seeking a mentor within the organization, joining any company initiatives to really enhance your visibility, I think is hugely important now within the world of work. And also taking ownership of development by, you know, maybe shadowing other departments, going to training, attending training, volunteering for projects, and really getting all the exposure you can to different parts of the business, I think is very important. Because I think it's quite easy to become, you know, a remote worker as a graduate. You could fade into obscurity, and nobody wants that to happen. So I think it really requires a lot of proactive work on the part of graduates.
Now, I did know a few employees over the years who were happy to fade into obscurity. I know what you're trying to say, exactly. Yes. What you're trying to say. Would it be an idea to, you know, look for a meeting for a coffee with somebody and say, look, can I meet you outside the strict screen life? Is that something you'd advise?
Absolutely. And I think also, you know, on days that people are in the office, because quite often there'll be these anchor days when everybody's in on a you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever that might be, make sure that those days you use them to the best of your ability. So don't go into the workplace and sit behind a computer screen for those days. Proactively go up to people and say, can we have a coffee? You know, can we have lunch? Whatever that might be. And just feed off that time and get as much exposure as you can and network as much as you can on those days.
Yeah, I think that's really sensible. Human contact, that hasn't been phased out yet, folks. And the other thing I was going to ask you, Louise, is just about getting that job in the first place. Obviously, existing, as you said, as a remote worker has its challenges, but getting the first job, the first contact point is going to be that CV that goes in, resume, as our American counterparts would call it. And obviously, as you said, that can be screened, it can be digested, its accuracy and authenticity can be tested by various tools and so on. But just tell me where the modern CV fits in your opinion. Is it still everything? Is it less important? Is it just a calling card? What just kind of give us your sense in 2025 where the CV fits in all of this sort of process?
Well, it's interesting, Emma, because in 2025, the CV is still a really important part of a job seeker's life cycle. I think if you were to ask us that in 5 years' time, I would say that the CV, it's predicted it won't exist in the future. What's happening with the CV at the moment is very interesting. If you ask people, do they use AI to enhance their CV? They might look at you and go, is this a trick question? But we could be fairly certain that the majority of job seekers at the moment are using some form of AI to enhance their CV. And this is leading to an interesting trend. And I was listening to a podcast recently where a head of talent referred to the CV applications as a sea of sameness, right? So they're so beautifully written these days, and everybody is so proficient at everything that on a first glance, some, you know, graduate CVs can look phenomenal. The challenge is now, from an employer perspective, being able to differentiate graduate CVs. They all look the same. So what this means is that the next stage of the interview, which is typically a telephone screening, is becoming more influential in selecting those who you bring forward for an actual interview. So time saved in one area has actually increased in another. I think the CV of the future, because I don't think AI is going anywhere, obviously not, and it's only going to get stronger. And if people continue to use and enhance their CVs through AI, I think what is going to happen is that the CV in its current shape and form is not going to exist in the future. It will be replaced by skills-based profiles and real-time, digital assessments. So what I mean by that is your CV is going to become much more dynamic and interactive, and will be sitting on a talent marketplace somewhere, you know, online, which will display your real-time skills. So, you know, in the future, employers are going to be able to look at that. And I think the traditional one or two page CV is going to be a thing of the past.
And is that because, and I don't want to push you too hard on this, but is that because some people are telling fibs on the CV? They're just using language that's a little bit excitable, or what's going on?
Well, I think that, you know, it creates this very generic template at the moment, unless you put a lot of time into it. You know, the CVs can all look and sound the same.
Yeah, and everyone's sort of over-promoting themselves in the sense of what they were doing and their level of responsibility and so on.
Slightly. And it's only when you talk to people and then you realise, oh, OK, you weren't really responsible for that. You didn't really oversee that. You were part of a team. It just is creating a slight false environment at the moment. And I think, you know, the whole idea of having this real-time platform of skills in the future is where it's going to be, because a two-page document isn't going to be the best way to be able to assess and select the best talent in the market.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like these older devices like CVs are going out, but as you said, the interview is coming in again. So it's kind of a mixed bag in that sense, isn't it?
But AI is certainly, Emmett, it's you know, we're trialing at the moment within Smurfit virtual AI interviews. And they are, they're incredible. So I think down the line, there will be a place in time for, you know, whether that be initial interviews will be done by a virtual AI assistant. And then the information that's coming out of these interviews is phenomenal. So it's going to be a really interesting time over the next 5 years to see where that lands.
Now, before we let you go, because we are under time pressure a little bit, it's just to get a sense from you of what are the broader trends in terms of the job market and what areas are hot and what are not and so on. And everyone, of course, is obsessed with this. We've obviously got a tough geopolitical background, which you won't get into on this podcast. But is there particular areas that are doing well, others maybe less so? Or can you just talk us through what's the broad trends of where the jobs are and who's hiring and who's not hiring and so on?
Sure. I think, the broad trends, you know, I suppose from a soft skills point of view, is really the key to standing out is a mix of your soft skills, your data literacy, adaptability, proactive learning, etc. I think in terms of where, you know, we are seeing employers hiring in volume, it's across the board at the moment. I mean, there's peaks and troughs. You know, there's going to be some years where financial services is incredibly busy, some years where it cuts back, same with professional services. We're really seeing more themes in terms of data analytics is always key, and it's growing. And anything, you know, along that the programming side as well, so skills in Python, etc., are always going to be highly valued. Sustainability is a huge area at the moment that I think that, you know, that transcends a lot of industries as well, whether that be healthcare, pharmaceuticals, consulting, financial services. Sustainability and ESG are all really growth areas. The same as fintech, you know, and you're looking at the fintech and the payment space. So you're looking at pockets within the economy which are incredibly busy, and we can't get enough people. There's real skill shortages in certain areas. And then there are other areas that I would say are, you know, not so busy and probably not growing at a very substantial rate at the moment. But certainly within, you know, tech, programming, data analytics, sustainability, ESG, And the world of fintech, there's certainly a few areas just off the top of my head that I think are extremely busy at the moment.
All right. Well, listen, there's good advice in there. I think it's really interesting. I'm not sure I'd survive in that particular labour market, but hopefully people listening would. It's been very interesting to see all the different changes. And as you said, we're only at the start. We're only in the foothills, I suppose, of the AI revolution. And I'd like to talk to you again. Normally I say in a year's time, but imagine what it's going to be like in 5 years' time. It's going to be really interesting. So we'll definitely have you back at some stage, whatever the time period is. But for now, thank you very much, Louise. Louise Campbell, who is the Senior Manager of the UCD Smurfit Careers Network, we appreciate you joining us on today's edition.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Now, if you enjoyed this week's episode of the UCD Business Impact Podcast, please subscribe to episodes on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We cover a broad range of topics with insights from business leaders around the world, so there's sure to be something there for everyone. I'd like to thank our production team of Beth Gormley and Mike Liffey. They work tirelessly in the background, sourcing interviewees, editing, promoting episodes, and everything in between. I've been your host, Emmett Oliver, and we hope you can join us next time on UCD Business Impact.